Hi, everybody. I'm Sharon Garrison. I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me okay?
Okay, good.
And it's through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982. And that doesn't make me a miracle. It makes AA a miracle. If you're new in this room tonight, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I always call it God's Magnificent AA, the program that saved my life and it's going to save yours too, if you want to take a few quick actions. And I suggest staunch be the sponsor tonight, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get busy and do what everybody else is doing around here. And you're going to stay sober as I've stayed sober for 19 years, and people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. My home group is the Pacific Group in West LA, a group I'm very, very proud to be a member of, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And I guess if you're not proud, you got to get a job, and you might change your mind. I certainly have a job in mind, and I'm proud to have that job. I want to thank Kelly and the committee for inviting me to come up tonight. This is an honor and a privilege, it's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. You guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, I really do, and I think that it shows when I make an awful lot of mistakes and I do an awful lot of things wrong. But I'll tell you one thing, that I love you, make no mistake about that. You know, I have had, without a doubt, the worst week of my entire sobriety. Not really, but I think it is. 2 days ago, I got this terrible toothache, and I thought, my God, what the hell's wrong with my tooth? And it was all infected, and the dentist had to pull it and stuff. And he said, now you can't wear your bottom teeth for a week. I said, what? And he said, you cannot wear your teeth for a week. I have this partial plate and stuff. And I said, I have to go give a talk setting. And he said, I'm sorry, don't wear the plate. You're asking for trouble. And I thought, oh, great, wonderful, you know. And so I called my sponsor. This is the kind of empathy I get from my sponsor. And I said, you know, my teeth, and I said, give that talk. And he said, well, that's all very interesting. Now get your ass on the plane and go to Fresno, you know. You know, our book says our ego has got to be smashed, and mine is smashed tonight, let me tell you. But anyway, I'm delighted tonight and glad to be sober and stuff. And, you know, I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I ever opened my big mouth. And one year to talk to that sponsor. And Clancy says, you was looking very best wishes tonight. And anybody in this room is one of my demand for a sponsor, my Clancy for a sponsor. It's really quite simple. I did not get sober in California. I got sober in a place called Lincoln, Nebraska, which is just a terrible place to get sober, if you want to know the truth. And I was not doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous in Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud of this. I stand here tonight. And thank God for the old-timers in AA, because somebody loved me enough to get my current sponsor. And I got to say that my life has done nothing but totally, completely change as a result of that. I absolutely adore the ground that man walks on. I talked to him this morning before I left, and I said, what do you want me to talk about tonight? And he said, oh, quit trying to be cute. Get up there and show your experience, your strength, and your hope, and tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They got it. They don't need your inspiration, my dear. And talk directly to those new people, the life and blood of A. And I believe it as I stand here, and I welcome you, and I hope that you stand. And I think I did, without a doubt, the most important thing I can ever do. And that's to say, God, please help me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life tonight, you guys. It's not used to be that way for me, I can guarantee you. I want to thank Boo for picking me up from the airport and being such a great hostess for me. We had a wonderful time this afternoon. She's got a delightful couple of kids, and I just had a great time with her. Thank you so much for being a great service to me. But anyway, like you said, we had trouble at the hotel, you know, and it just proceeded to get worse from then on, didn't it, Boo? But you know what? We made it. My God, we made it and stuff. But anyway, you know, the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was a color of squash. I had an alcoholic hepatitis. I had liver cirrhosis. I had ruptured esophageal varices. And if you guys don't know what that stuff is, you don't want to know this because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And if you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you it's not one of your finer wines, I can assure you. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crack has never seen a grape, make no mistake about that. I literally could not believe what's gone in my life. I'd lost my children. I'd lost my husband twice. Although I really care about that, I want you to know. I'd lost my car. I'd lost my house. I destroyed every relationship I'd ever had with anybody. And I was clearly dying from alcoholism. And then I lost the one thing about my niece's disease. I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession. That's what devastated me, but did not stop me from drinking. And there's a reason for that, and it's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was read here tonight, that I have an obsession that somehow, someday, I will learn to control and enjoy my drinking. The pursuit of that illusion is astonishing, just like our book talks about, man's pursuit negates insanity and death. And I'll guarantee you one thing, I was in the gates of pure insanity that's opened almost into my coffin. And I am so grateful for this program as I stand at night, I cannot begin to tell you. And you're going to soon see why and stuff. But here, like I said earlier, my sobriety is May 30th, 1982. It was not always my sobriety date. when I got my current sponsor, I had to change that date, and there's a reason for that. I'm one of these people that I go smoke dope when I got sober. And you know, if you're smoking marijuana this room night, you are not sober now, but Thomas, I will tell you right this minute. And I don't want to argue about it afterwards. Ask any old-timer if you don't believe me. And if I had to change my date, then by God, so do you. But anyway, I got my current sponsor, and I tried to explain to him, well, I'm from Nebraska. You can have two sobriety dates, one from alcohol and one from drugs. And he quickly pointed out to me that I was in Southern California. We had one day here to get my date changing. And I was just a smartass when I got my current sponsor. And I said, where does the book mention pot? He said, well, the book does mention pot. And I said, frankly, I had read that book. He was not talking about marijuana in that book. And he said, if I find the word pot in that book, will you change your sobriety or argue with me again? And I knew I was making a bad deal, you guys, but I did anyway. And I'll be damned if he didn't flip open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. On the first page of Bill Wilson's story, it says, died by methadone or by pot. I said, that is not what that means. And he said, quite frankly, my dear, I don't care what it means. You said the book didn't mention pot. It does mention pot. Change your sobriety date. And my life is flourished, I got to tell you guys. But anyway, I'm delighted to be here tonight. And, you know, this has been, without a doubt, the best year of my sobriety. It really, truly hasn't. Within the same amount of time, it's been one of the worst years of my sobriety. And, you know, you can stay sober no matter what the hell happens to you in Alcoholics Anonymous, I will tell you right now. And, you know, if September the 11th wasn't bad enough, let me tell you what happened to me a week before that. I mean, I think that affected all of us in a deep way and stuff. But, you know, I went to the bank on the week before September 11th, and I was going over to Las Vegas to meet a boyfriend of mine. And he said, you know, just east from New York, and I have a relationship that lives in New York. That's why we get along so well. He's in New York City. I'm in Los Angeles, you know. And we see each other a couple times a month, and it just works out great for us and stuff. But anyway, I said, okay, I'll come over there. And I went to the bank, and I won't mention the bank. Yes, I will mention the bank. It's U.S. Bank is what it is. But anyway, I went to the bank, and I looked at my receipt. I got $400 out of the bank, and I thought, this isn't right. This is about $400 off, not in my favor. And I thought, well, it's probably computer catch-up time. I'll check it later tonight. But I had this sense of impending doom, you guys, like you cannot even believe. But I always had that to a certain extent, but it was bad, and I thought, don't forget to call him. So I went home, and I went to see some friends of mine in Apple Valley from Nebraska before I went to Las Vegas, and I called the bank about 11:30 at night. And they said, you know, it's like minus $13,000 insufficient funds. And you guys, I had like a substantial amount of money in a money market account at that bank, and in addition to a checking account, a savings account, and things like that, a mutual fund. And I mean, I couldn't talk to anybody. It was like computer catch-up time around midnight. And they said, call us back, you know, at midnight, and you can talk to somebody. But I ran my last couple transactions, and it was like minus $22,000, minus $6,000, minus, it was total of $156,000 is what I'm trying to say. And I did not have that kind of money in the bank. Please don't get me wrong, but I did have a substantial amount of money. All the money I had in the whole world was in that bank. And you know how fear grips us? And I thought, oh my God, what the hell has happened to my bank account and stuff? And those were not my transactions, obviously. But I called back about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I talked to somebody, and they said, well, apparently somebody has written checks against your account and stuff. And they weren't my checks. They were stolen checks written against my account. And they hit 13 chains of U.S. Bank within 10 minutes of each other. There was like 48 people involved in it. 4 of the bank tellers were involved in it. And they're all arrested and stuff by now. But you know, I didn't know that at the time, let me tell you. And I thought, you know, I have a terrible history with banks when I was drinking. I thought, my God, what if they find out about me? What am I going to do? And I've been taught to call my sponsor when I'm feeling like that. And my sponsor told me, he says, you know what, Karen? You don't know anything about running the bank. Shut your mouth and do what they tell you to do. It's all going to be fine and stuff. But I talked to the most wonderful woman on the telephone, you guys. She was just loving me. I never once lost my temper. I was very lovely to her. And I found out something very interesting here. If you're nice to people, they'll be nice to you, you know. But anyway, she told me, she said, you know, apparently there's very bank fraud associated with this. And she said, you know, you have longevity with this bank, and we have insurance. It's all going to be taken care of, but we got to prove that it's not you first. And I thought, see, there's the problem. That's going to be the problem. And I didn't say that to her, but she said, when you get over to Vegas, give us your hotel. I'm going to have the bank fraud people call you on Monday, and you can start dealing with them. And I said, okay, so I had to wait a whole weekend to deal with this. It's now Friday night, right? I thought, now I don't have any money to spend in Vegas. Cute, you know. But anyway, I got over to Vegas. That guy did call me, and he, again, was one more time very lovely to me. And he told me, he said, well, I'll be taken care of, Karen. You've got a great record with this bank. Don't worry about it, you know. He said, when you get back to Los Angeles, you're going to have to start running these checks over to us because you're going to be getting them in the mail. And he said, every day they've got to be notarized, taken to us, the LAPD. You've got to get the FBI in charge of this because it's over $100,000.
you're going to have a lot of people to deal with. I thought, oh, great, just what I want to deal with is the LAPD, you know. But anyway, I'm so glad I'm not in trouble. Don't have a warrant out for my arrest because I'd have been busted on this one. But anyway, I did what I was asked to do. I had to take literally a week off to work to do it and stuff. But it's so eerie, you guys, opening 42 checks that are not yours with your name on them, you know. What these people have done was they put my name down, you know, and then they had a phony driver's license, a phony social security card, and they got away with it, let me tell you. But anyway, long story short, I did all the stuff I was asked to do. And you know what the LAPD told me? They said, you are the loveliest woman we have ever worked with. And they said, my God, this is probably the worst thing that's ever happened to you. And I said, baby, it's not even in the top five. I thought, I don't want to hear your AA pitch, shut up, you know. But anyway, it's all taken care of, the money's back in the bank, and I quit whining about it, you know. But I mean, so that happened to me, and then the very next week, one of the girls I sponsored in Seattle, Washington, her son was killed. And the next week, a girl that she sponsored, her son was killed. I couldn't believe it, you know. And just one thing right after the other, and then I'll be damned if my son didn't get busted for possession of crack cocaine with intent to sell. You know, those are federal charges, you know. And you know, I'm powerless. There's nothing I can do about that and stuff. And then the final crowning blow for me anyway was a woman I'd worked with for 12 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the oldest people I sponsor, as a matter of fact. I thought she'd been using drugs for the last 10 years. I had to take 12 years of sobriety away from her. And we put her into a treatment center and tried to see what we could do to help her. I really felt like I went way beyond the call of duty with her. I felt like I was an excellent sponsor for her, and I don't feel bad about anything I did. But we got out of that treatment center, and I'll be damned if she doesn't come back to L.A. and she fires me and gets somebody else. Isn't that just the story of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys? But, you know, I can tell you something. You can stay sober no matter what the hell happens to you in this program if you do what you're supposed to do. And during all these things that happened to me, I never once missed a meeting, never once missed working with the people I sponsor. I talked to my sponsor. I kept my commitments, and I kept on keeping on. And in other words, I just did the deal around here, and it served me well, let me tell you. And I never once thought about drinking. What I thought about was, what can I do to make it better? What can I do to get these problems solved and stuff? And anyway, you guys, I'm delighted to be here tonight. And you know, when I got sober, I was $86,000 in debt in Alcoholics Anonymous. And a year ago, last April, I got a debt $86,000. And you know how we all have to call our sponsor up and brag about it. And I have to remember something here. My sponsor is the one that made me do it, you know. I wanted to file bankruptcy. And he said, not with me as your sponsor, little girl. You're paying her to send that money back, and you can find somebody else to sponsor you. And so I did pay that money back. It only took me almost 17 short years to do it. But it's like paying for dead horses everywhere. But you know what? As I stand here tonight, I know the sense of true freedom. Let me tell you guys. I don't know anybody in the whole world of pennies. I stand here tonight except for car payment. I think most of us have that and stuff. So I know the sense of freedom. But anyway, I called my sponsor that day. I meant that made that last payment. I said, well, I'm out of debt. Aren't you proud of me? He said, not really. You're just a citizen of all you are, you know. And he said, besides that, you're not a debt lawyer. You lost Vegas that money. But many, many years ago, I read an inventory to my sponsor, and I'm sorry to say that my sponsor never forgets anything I say, you know. But anyway, I made mention of the fact that many years ago, I was with a bunch of drunk cowboys from Lincoln, Nebraska, and we were at the start of this hotel, and somebody had a gun, and they blew a hole in the wall, and we burned up their carpet and stuff, and it was just a big drunken party is what it was. And when I got back to Nebraska, I'm sorry to say that the room was in my name. I got a bill for $3,330, and I thought, I'm not paying them that. I dumped $5,000 at the casino. I'm not paying them nothing. That's just the way I felt about it. And ironically, I never heard another word from them and stuff, and I wasn't about to address it. I was drinking and stuff. But anyway, I must have felt bad about it because I mentioned it to my sponsor, and he said, one of these days you're going to pay that money back. And I thought, yeah, yeah, yeah. I had no intention of paying it back. But I thought, let him talk. He'll forget about it. You know, by the time I get out of debt, he'll probably be dead, you know. But anyway, he didn't forget it at all. And he said, you make arrangements to pay that money back to the Stardust. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to really have to do this and stuff. And I didn't do it. And a couple weeks went by. Every day he'd say to me, did you call the Stardust? Did you make the arrangements to pay that money back? Did you do it yet? No. Get it done. Don't talk to me till you do it. And I thought, damn it. And within that period of time, I'd go over to Laughlin, Nevada, and speak at the January Roundup over there. And we were hanging around the casino on Sunday morning, waiting for the meeting to start. And I just love triple diamond slot machines, you guys. I just love them. And I thought, now don't start playing that, you know, in case you don't leave or walk away, and we got a meeting to go to in 20 minutes. And I thought, well, I can walk away in 20 minutes, you know. But anyway, I started playing that slot machine, and I hit that baby for $200, for $600, and for $2,500 in 20 minutes flat. What is that total? $33 $100 bills. And I thought, you know what, I could go pay the starter staff with this money, or else I could, the hell with the mean, I'll stay in the casino and gamble all day. And I thought, you know what, you never have to listen to Clancy's mouth again, go pay the money back. Sometimes my brain tells me the right stuff to do, and so I called the Stardust up, and I thought, I'd add $30 of my own money and go pay the money back. And I called them, and I asked the two of their executives over there, and, you know, I don't know if this is true or not, but rumor has it the mob still runs the Stardust. And I thought, Jesus, what if they shoot me, you know? But I thought, it makes no difference. I still have to pay the money back. And I told them, I said, I need to come over and talk to you. And they said, well, what do you want? And I said, I really need to do this in person. And they said, well, hurry up and get over here, because we're going to be leaving in a couple hours. And so I dashed over to Vegas. It's only 80 miles from Laughlin, and got over there. And I sat down, girls, with three of the best-looking Italian men you've ever seen before in your life. And it kind of enhanced the pleasure of the whole thing. And I laid down $3,100 plus my own $30, and I told them what had happened. And they were flabbergasted, you guys. It just made me sick to do it. I almost threw up. There was not one ounce of sincerity there. My only motive was I never had to listen to Clancy's mouth again was my motive. But anyway, I told them what happened. They said, oh, my God, why are you doing this? I said, because I want to stay sober. And they said, oh, you remember about that summons? I said, as a matter of fact, done. And they said, well, aren't you a great example? And I thought, yes, I am. You know? Please, you know. And we are such a trip, aren't we, you guys? But anyway, they said, Karen, we can't take that money. My God, we wrote that off years ago. And I said, then put it in your pocket. I don't care what you do with it. It's not my money. It's yours. At this time, it was fire in my hands. I just wanted to get rid of it and stuff. And they said, well, let's give it to your favorite charity. And I said, no, let's give it to yours. We don't take credit for nothing around here, folks. And they said, well, how about the mission in downtown Vegas? I said, whatever you want to do is fine with me. And anyway, they wrote me out a check for that amount of money. I gave them the money. I mailed the check to the mission in downtown Vegas and stuff. And you know what? I got back to L.A. and my sponsor said to me, why did you give it to them? Why didn't you give it to my mission in downtown L.A.? You know? And I said, it was Nevada's call, that's why. You know, but anyway. You know, you guys, motives mean nothing around here. And you know how come I know that for sure? Because I did not even want to pay that money back. And I walked out of that hotel, and I will tell you something. The sky was never blue in Las Vegas, Nevada. Those buildings were never wider. I felt the serenity, the inner peace, the peace of mind that we can only make amends in Alcoholics Anonymous. And one more time, I felt the promises in this program. So I know this thing works. You just got to do it for it to work. And so that amendment was made for me. And then the last amendment I had to make was something that I really wanted to find this guy, and I couldn't find him anywhere. And this one was a sincere one on my part. And a long time ago, about 30 years ago, I found myself in Winnipeg, Canada, coming out of a blackout, driving a stolen car, going 90 miles an hour. And I thought, what am I doing in Winnipeg, Canada? How do I even get over here? And I remember going across the border. And last time I remember, I was in North Dakota visiting a boyfriend of mine. And I must have taken his car. We got into a fight, and I left. And I didn't know the damn thing was stolen, or I wouldn't have taken it. But anyway, I don't know how you report a stolen car stolen, but by God, he did. And my perceptions of reality have always been so distorted, I can't begin to tell you guys. And I think of the Mounties on horses chasing you, they're in cars chasing you. And I got pulled over this Mountie, and he walked up to my car door, and he said, young lady, do you know how fast you were going? And I said, no. He said, get out of the car, I smell alcohol. And I said, I don't live in your country, and you can't tell me what to do. Don't ever say that to Royal Canadian Mounted Police. I was actually in Exeter Cabo one way that night, and that guy literally jerked me out the side door, and on my way out the door, I took my purse with me, and I hit him in the forehead with it. And the blood just flew, you guys. I had a chain on my purse, and it hit him just right, and he had terrible laceration in his forehead, and I thought, Karen, you have done it now. And I'm talking about a big man. He probably weighed 200 pounds, and I was probably all about 95 pounds in it. And the blood was just all over. I said, oh, God, I'm in trouble now. But I never would have acted that way. But anyway, a lady came out to arrest me, a female police officer up here. And obviously, I spent some time in jail in Winnipeg and stuff. And I was in jail for 13 days up there. And my family gave me a training up to Nebraska to get me out of jail. It cost me about $18,000 to get out of that. And I just blew it off like it was no big deal. You know, drinking things are going to happen occasionally. So what? But, you know, during my jail time there, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous came to visit me, and it turns out it was this Mountie's brother, and he came to my jail cell, and I was the only woman in that jail, and it wasn't really a jail, it was like a holding room they had me in and stuff. And anyway, he knocks on the door, and he said, you know, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. We come over here once in a while, and obviously you're in trouble. Can we be of service to you? I thought, be of service to me? I can get the hell away from my jail cells, which you can do. I obviously was not ready for AA at that time, but you guys, I never forgot that man. Every day of my drinking, I thought about that guy. The seed was planted, and I thought, Thomas, but Anyway, all those years went by, and that guy also told me, he said, you know, you really hurt my brother bad. He's got 56 stitches in his head and had to have surgery, and I thought, oh, I felt so awful. But anyway, I kept right on drinking. And I read that inventory to my sponsor. He said, you find that Mountie and you make amends to him. And I was more than willing to do that because I know the promises come true. And he said, call up to Winnipeg and find out what his name was. I didn't have the paperwork anymore and stuff. And I called up to Winnipeg and they said, lady, we have no idea who you're talking about. We just read the records after about 6 or 7 years. And I said, oh, you have to find my Mountie. I have to find him. And they said, lady, leave us alone. We're busy. And I thought, what am I going to do? And I called my sponsor and he said, well, you know, you tried to do it. What else can you do? Keep your eye open and be of service. I thought, keep my eye open and be of service? What kind of stupid direction is that? I didn't say that, but that's what I thought. And it turned out to be the direction I needed to hear, let me tell you. And I boarded an aircraft last May to go to Calgary, Canada to give a talk. And every time I go up there, the hair on my neck stands straight up. I'm afraid they're going to keep me and stuff. But, I mean, that mess is cleaned up, and I get afraid when I go to Canada. Anyway, I got on the airplane. I won't mention the airline, but they fly in the friendly skies, United Airlines. Had mechanical fury at LAX, and you're on the ground another hour and a half. And you know, I get on the planes in the morning. I really don't like to talk to people. I bring my dirty books with me, and I just want to read them and stuff. And I'm talking to people, and I said, "Hello," the old guy sitting next to me, and sat down. And this old man had a cast on his leg, and he said good morning to me, and he had a mechanical failure. And people on this airplane were just in a rage, you guys. You ought to see them. And I thought, don't these people know when they're powerless, for Christ's sake? And anyway, we finally got in the air. And San Francisco held us 4 times. We're down out of fuel. We're down in San Jose. And this time I was in a rage, let me tell you. I missed my Friday night talk. I was livid with rage. And now we're going to get to Canada the next day and stuff. But, and you know, my sponsors taught me, when I'm acting like that, I'm doing something real quick to change my behavior because I'm not ready to make a total ass out of myself. And so I asked this old man sitting next to me, I said, I noticed that you have a tax on your leg. Can I get you a cup of coffee or something? He said, well, that'd be very, very nice. And he said, you look so familiar to me. I said, really? He said, yeah, you do. And I thought, wonder why. I got his coffee and sat back down. He said, why are you going to Canada? And I said, I don't mind telling people I'm an A. And I said, I'm going to give an AA talk, actually. And he said, oh, my brother's an AA. I said, really? He said, yeah, he's been sober for 43 years. And I said, oh, so is my sponsor. And he said, who's your sponsor? And I told him, and he said, oh, I heard Clancy talk in Toronto a month ago. He said, I'm actually a member of Al-Anon, and I go to support my brother. And I said, oh, that's wonderful. I just wanted to shut up and leave me alone, basically. I was nice to him. And thank God I talked to him. But anyway, he said, you know, did you ever get in trouble in Canada? And this is really starting to get weird, you guys. And I thought, oh, this can't be happening. And I said, well, you know, I presume that you're retired. What did you do for a living? He said, just tell the story, Karen. I never told him my name, you guys. And I thought, oh, my God. He said, just tell the story. And I told the whole story. And you guys, you looked up a lock of hair. And there was a scar from 30 years ago. And I hit that guy in the forehead. I have found my magic. Can you believe that? Tears rolling down my cheeks. I thought, oh my God, this is incredible. What if I wouldn't have talked to him? I never would have found him and stuff. And I know my sponsor told me, keep your eye open and be of service, you know. And that's why I got him the coffee and stuff. And at any rate, you know, there was that horrible scar. And I said, I am so sorry that I did that. What can I do to make that right? And he said, you paid my hospital bill. Forget about it. And I said, oh, please let me do something for you. And he said, okay, you can wait on me the rest of the trip. And I said, okay, that'll be fine. And he said, I know what we can do. We can call my brother. I said, oh, let's do it, that'll be great. He said, well, get out your credit card, there's the telephone. I thought, it cost me about $30 a minute, but I was more than happy to do that. And we called his brother was so excited. And I said, you know, I can't access L.A. on this cell phone. I don't know why I can't get you, but would you call my sponsor and tell him what's happening on this telephone? I could not wait to get back to tell my sponsor. And he said, I would love to talk to him. And I said, and I'll pay you for the phone call. He said, forget about it. I'd love to talk to him. So he called my sponsor. He and my sponsor told his brother, I told her years ago to keep her eye open and be of service. That's exactly what she's done. It's all panned out for her. Tell her congratulations for me, and I'll see her when she gets home and stuff. But anyway, that Mountie and I have developed quite a relationship here. Not a male-female relationship, just a friendly relationship. And, you know, once a month, all the Mounties that used to work together up there are all retired now. And they have lunch once a month. And they now all sent me a picture of the jail cell I was in. And they all signed the back of it. You're the worst woman we ever had in the Winnipeg jail, and we're so glad you're sober, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, pleasure that picture. It's my most prized possession in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, you guys, you never know what's going to happen in AA. You never know what's going to happen. That, I think, is probably 1 in 3 million shot that happened to me. You know, so my amends are done in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now I'm just working on current garbage is what I'm working on and stuff. But
Anyway, I'm so, I love to come to Fresno and Visalia. I've been here many, many times, and I love your old-timers up here. They're strong AA members and stuff, and I hope if you're new here tonight, you do what these people have done, and you too will stay sober enough, like Thomas. But anyway, you can all invite you to come down to my home again, LA, the Pacific group. We'd love to have you come down. It's the biggest AA group in the world. There's 1,200 people in the room, and we'd love to have you guys again, but everybody's got to see it at least one time anyway. But anyway, you guys, I have a wonderful home there in Nebraska, and I want you to know that my mother wants you to know it too. I'll guarantee you that. You know, my mom died 10 years ago, and I miss that woman so much I can't begin to tell you. Boy, you only get one, and when they're gone, folks. And I made amends to her many, many years ago. We had a wonderful relationship last year's of life and stuff, but I just miss her terribly. And I come from an alcoholic home, and I don't think that's either here nor there. I don't do well with people who stand at AA podiums or blame anybody for anything. And my father died from this disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And you tell me how a major in the Air Force died on a skid row. I don't know how that happened. But in the fact, he was an alcoholic. And whether he was found at AA or not, I do not know. I just know that he certainly got to stay sober as a result of it. And, you know, one more time tonight, this is a cunning, baffling, powerful disease that kills people. This is not a game I'm playing up, but this is serious business. And I would give any word if my father were alive tonight, because we would have a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who was Miss Rava in high school and homecoming queen, and surely all that kind of crap, and made straight A's, never cracked a book, and I made straight S's and never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I gotta tell you. She was a model for many, many years for Neiman Marcus in Dallas, and now she's retired. She teaches school in the West Indies. And I gotta tell you guys, as a direct result of this program, I love my sister very, very much tonight. I found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside, too, and I never used to know that. I have a brother who's a pilot Navy in Spain who got from Operation Desert Storm. As a matter of fact, my brother retired in August. He was a fighter pilot for many, many years. And, you know, now he's been called back into the service, you guys. And he is really old to be a fighter pilot. He's like 44 years old. And he's my junior by about 15 years here and stuff. But, you know, we were growing up. I thought my brother was such a dork, you guys. I really did. Straight as an arrow, Mike, doesn't drink, doesn't use drugs, doesn't screw around. He was an embarrassment to me, if you want to know the truth. And tonight I'm so proud of that man, I can't begin to tell you. He wouldn't catch me over Afghanistan in any fighter plane, but either one of these people are alcoholic. And I have another sister who's married to a public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of a whole bunch of trouble when I got sober, and I'm welcome to their home state I never used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, to know the truth. They're high special people, and they bore me to tears, I gotta tell you guys. I have a couple kids who are 42 and 43 years old, and I know I certainly have old enough to have kids that age, and by God, I sure do. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me. These kids are anything but boring, I gotta tell you guys. As a matter of fact, they're a couple of jerks, if you want to know the truth. But you know what? Those couple of jerks have given me five of the most gorgeous grandbabies you've ever seen before in your life. And, you know, I hate to be a bragging grandmother as I stand here tonight. I detest people that do this, but when I do, it's a whole different ballgame, let me tell you. I have a beautiful grandson. His name is Ryan, and Ryan is 14 years old, and Ryan and I are just connected, I gotta tell you guys, and I just adore this child, and apparently Ryan is quite a gymnast, you guys, and I knew he was good, I know he was that good, and my son is like on a phone call from Budweiser out of St. Louis, Missouri, wanted to sponsor this kid and train him for the Olympics, you guys, and my son called me, and this is the kind of alcoholic I am. I jumped from phone call to Olympic Stadium, gold medal around his neck, and what will I wear, you know, and it happened just that quick. But I found myself telling my child, Jeff, he's your son. You have to do what you think is right. And he said, Mom, he's so little to be going away. And I said, he's your baby, not mine. I wanted to shriek him and say, let him go, you idiot. It's the opportunity of a lifetime. But I didn't say that either. Once in a while, I keep my mouth shut now for like some, and it serves me well. But he said, Mom, you know, I'm actually asking you some advice. We don't know what to do. And I said, well, since you're asking me, then I will give you some. I said, we have a dear friend in Lincoln who's a child psychologist. And I said, why don't you have Chris come over and talk to Ryan and see what he thinks? And my son did exactly that. And if that child psychologist told my son and his wife, let him go, it's the opportunity of a lifetime. He's a very stable young man. So I'm happy to report here tonight that my little grandbaby is down in Norman, Oklahoma, trying to Nadia Comaneci about Connors Clinic down there. And I don't know what's going to happen to that, you guys. I have no idea what's going to happen. But I'll guarantee you one thing. If that baby goes to Greece, his grandma will be in that stadium. If I have to walk to Greece, I'll be there. But, our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says that great events will come to pass for us and countless others. And I want to share a great event in my life. I just get so teary-eyed when I tell this story because it's so precious to me. You know, when I got sober, my family would not even speak to me, you guys. And they wanted nothing to do. My grandkids have never seen me drink, and I hope to God they never do. But
Anyway, you know, there was just nobody there for me when I got sober except you. You know, there was always you there. It's taken years to correct those things, and it's okay now, but yeah, I think it's as good as going to be with my kids, but things are great with my grandbabies, let me tell you. But anyway, on my early birthday last May, May 30th, my grandson Ryan called me, and it was his first day down in Norman, Oklahoma, and he says, "Oh, grandmother, I'm so sorry to call you so late." And I said, "It is never too late to call your grandmother. Don't you ever think that." And he says, "I wanted to wish you a happy 19th day of your birthday." And I thought, "Oh, my God, you know, my God." And I just stood there and cried like a baby. And he says, "Oh, Grandma, we're so proud of you." And I thought, "You don't even know what the hell you're talking about. You didn't say that." And that's how precious this thing is to me and stuff. And he said, "Oh, Grandma, I didn't mean to make you cry." And I said, "You didn't make me cry. I'm crying because I'm so happy that you called me. And what a lovely thing to do, Ryan. Thank you and stuff." But, you know, you never know what's going to happen, man. Your folks, let me tell you. But anyway, there I was in Nebraska. I was a disruptive jerk when I was growing up. And always in trouble, getting kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I really hated people telling me what to do. And I liked it even less today, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And I did that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that 125%, I got to tell you. You know, I really don't remember my first drink, you guys. But I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one. And I hope it was my last one. Remember that alcohol gripped me from the very beginning. It made me feel like I belonged. And I could be anything I wanted to be. I could do anything I wanted to do. I drank at any given opportunity after that. And I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm in need of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, and I honor your podium by talking about alcoholism up here. I used a lot of drugs too. Make that a small part of my story. My sponsor encourages me to do that. You know, when I was growing up in Lincoln, there just wasn't a lot of drugs on the street. But I'll guarantee you, I found every single one of those drugs. And so there was some marijuana and weed and stuff. And today, if you caught the possession of marijuana, you'd get a ticket, big deal. When I was drunk, you went to prison is what happened to you. And that didn't scare me, nothing scared me. I mean, I wasn't supposed to be doing them. I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here. That if you pat me on the head, my pants fall off is what happens to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You mean about how I love them. They've been the downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men. There's a room for them here tonight. I can just feel them. One thing, girls, I love about Southern California. It's got so many sick men, I'm just entertaining around the clock 24 hours a day. I have to tell you guys a funny story. I was in Nashville, Tennessee, speaking about maybe 11 years ago, and one of the fine ladies of Nashville, Tennessee, AA, walked up to me, asked her if I wanted to know, and this woman said to me, she said, "You're disgusting." And she wasn't kidding, you guys. She meant every word of it. And I said, "Lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I can assure you. And furthermore, if I wanted you to sponsor me, I'd come to Nashville and ask you." You know, I wish some women get this podium, and I wonder if they ever drank, you guys. I really do. Do all their drinking, and one said, "Shoot, came for the keyhole and an eyedropper." I was out there big time. I got myself into a lot of trouble. I've been taught to share that feeling of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I offend anybody in this room tonight, I would never offend anybody in the program that saved my life, let me tell you. Besides that, my book tells me, and this is my favorite part of our book, it says, "Cling to the thought that in God's hands your dark past will be the greatest possession that you have." And it goes on to say, "Because you can literally avert death and misery for others." And I found it to be very, very true in my sobriety. So if I have seen anybody, then I don't want to hear about it afterwards either. But anyway, I got pregnant when I was 16 years old, and I had to get married. And as it must be, I married an alcoholic. But most alcoholic women, I go for colorful, exciting men that beat the hell out of you and all kinds of stuff. And he wasn't even a man, you guys. He was only 17 and I was 16. I couldn't cook, I couldn't clean, I couldn't take care of a baby. Nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew, we had two babies to take care of. And I could find out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And as it must be, I married an individual that refused to work, that drank on a daily basis. He used to come and beat me up on a daily basis. And I had never seen a man that wouldn't be for in my life, you guys. I'll guarantee you one thing. If my dad would lay one hand on my mom, she'd have knocked him from here to the moon, I gotta tell you. And I grew to hate this guy very, very much. And I'm not blaming him for my disease. So please don't get me wrong. It's just part of my story, and I need to share it. And some of that family had to get a job. And I didn't finish junior high yet, for Christ's sakes. And I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Lincoln. And the magic was put in my life. I really fell in love with nursing. And I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school. I'd love to become a registered nurse. That's what I would love to do. You know, they said that alcoholics don't have willpower. And I'm going to tell you from this meeting that that's a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. I don't have any willpower as far as my disease goes. When I want to do something, I'm going to do it.
I went back, I finished junior high, I finished high school, I went to college full time for 3 years, and I worked full time for 3 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day. You guys know this hard stuff to do. I've not drank during this period of time. At the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand here tonight and tell you that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing, Nebraska, and they tell me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, you are no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession. I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people that I take care of nor the people I work with in their circumstances. And what I would tell you now is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild with what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never married these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism. I don't know anything about social drinking. I drank with drunks, and we do indeed die from this. And at the age of 27 years old, I went to work in surgery at a hospital there in Lincoln, and I had that job for 19 years. I love working in the operating room. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position. I drank, and with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard, and they paid hard. And I need to tell you guys that the instance of alcoholism amongst my profession is tremendously high, and that'd be a lot to secure if you're going to have surgery next week. It has to be very, very true. And those people are so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly the way to challenge the general way what our drinking is like. We get the general idea real quick what my drinking was like. I can tell you guys about my drinking about 5 seconds flat, you know, the truth. Many, many years ago, I was at a concert in upstate New York called Woodstock. I'm talking about the real Woodstock, not that piece of crap they had 4 summers ago. There will never be another Woodstock, trust me on that. It took me a 60-year party that nobody will ever match, I'm quite sure. And New York got when they're going to have this big event. And they tell these people, if you don't get medical coverage, you are not going to have this concert. So it started hiring people from the Midwest because they thought we were responsible. And we were a seedy lot, I can assure you. And I was the first drunk to sign up for this deal. And my 9 girls, I worked for the joint. I mean, you know, these doctors from New York, and they were at Woodstock. I've never seen so much alcohol in one place in my entire life. You could have filled a bathroom, no problem whatsoever. And the judge was like a candy store. And everybody was sharing, we were sharing narcotics on everybody else. And we just got the semi-truck on that back lot of Woodstock, and that was our hospital park back there. And I recall being that semi the entire week. I do recall this, I stand from the stage, and I said, Richie Havens sang Freedom, and Joe Cocker and Country Joe and Santa, those groups that I love. I come from the roaring 60s, you guys, and I love rock and roll, let me tell you. Things did not change in my life. One little tiny bit. I loved Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin was my lady, let me tell you. Wouldn't Janis Joplin have been a fine member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys? Yeah. I'd have hung out with Janis, let me tell you. I'd trade Janis for Clancy any day of the week if you wanted to. That's not true. That's a big fat lie. Don't tell him I said that. I don't mean it. I wouldn't trade my sponsor for 20 Janis Joplins. But, you know, drinking for me at one time was a fun thing, you guys. It'd be a lot of me saying anything but that. But I can't remember the fun and the pain it caused me. And one more time, I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, I can't begin to tell you and stuff. And I'm going to give you a couple quick drinking stories and get my recovery here. You know, I love the horse races, too. I love everything I'm supposed to be doing. I've been to horse races in Omaha, Nebraska, with a couple nurses I worked with. And the girls told me, they said, Karen, the horse race has been over for 3 hours. Well, jump, let's go back to Lincoln. And I said, well, run along. I met 2 guys from Constable's Island. These guys wanted to take me to a party, and by God, I was going. Like I said, you pat me on the head, and I'll follow you anywhere you want to go. And I really can't tell you much about this party to the guys that I was with. I just remember I woke up out of a blackout on Highway 2 by Palmyra, Nebraska, over a town of about 200 people, and I found out something very interesting about Palmyra, Nebraska, that they take a dim view and naked women walking on their highways. I found out. And then I was at 2 o'clock in the morning, walking stark naked down the highway, and my high heels carrying my purse, and it was February in Nebraska, and it's a bit nippy out there in February in Nebraska to be doing that. So I know a duck's feathers freeze, I can assure you. Of all the luck, the first person I ran to was a highway patrolman. And he in Nebraska, the cops travel by themselves. They don't have a partner. And out here in California, we're a bit smarter than them. And this guy stops his squad car, and he goes down his window. He turns on his siren, and he looked at me, and he said, what are you doing? And I thought, well, that's about the stupid thing I heard anybody say. It's quite obvious what I was doing. He said, lady, you get in this squad car, and you sit down, and don't you touch me. Well, you know, one thing about a person like myself, like I said earlier,
every time I'm in trouble, I'll do one thing more to make it worse every single time. I was at this cop, and I said, I'm not getting your squad car because you might try and rape me. He said, lady, I didn't get any money on it. You are absolutely disgusting is what you are. And I'm going to tell you guys that that made me madder. Then it was going on to show you how sick I was. That cop's raincoat. You know, cops keep raincoats in trunks of the car for these occasions. And I went downtown for indecent exposure, for assault and battery, for kicking his windshield, for hitting her, for hitting him, all the delightful antics that we pull as practicing alcoholics. And I will never forget how humiliating it was to be in that courtroom the very next morning when my brother-in-law, the public defender of Lincoln, Nebraska, came walking up to me, and I didn't know he was working there that day, standing in my raincoat, for Christ's sake. And he said, Sharon, have you lost your marbles or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I was to my brother-in-law, and I was to say this to many, many people in my drinking career and many, many courtrooms. I said, oh, for Christ's sake, this could happen to anybody. And I honest to God believe that. I really didn't. And that cost me about $3,000 to get out of that. And I just blew it off like it was no big deal. But I did learn one thing from that event I want to share with you, and this is all that I learned. Don't ever drink with men from Council Bluffs, Iowa, and I kept right on drinking. And they joint driving charges and the bad checks, my kids were in trouble. And I thought, you know what, I can't marry these guys I'm engaged to. They keep dying from alcoholism. I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. They can't keep their father, besides trying to get even him for all the things he's done to me. And I'm certainly not proud as I stand here tonight. You know, if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married, this barn, is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe this is like taking a bite out of the same turd twice if you want. That's the way I feel. Why they love me in Nashville, folks, but I danced that man through three of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth, and I love to tell you this story. I'm ready to tell you. My sponsor always tells me that is not funny, and you should not be telling that from AA podiums. And I said, okay, fine, then I won't tell anymore. And he said, no, go ahead and let those people see how sick you really were, and apparently how sick you really still are. I'm still sick, and I still think it's funny, and I'm telling the story. When I married him again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I'll kill you next time you hit me. And he said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied is what he didn't. And he came home drunk one night. And I happened to be sober this night for some reason. I'll never know why, because I usually wasn't. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk? They want to take you to bed and stuff. And I was not buying it. If there's anything I can't stand it, some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. And when the shoe's under the football, it's fine with me. And that guy came home and indicated that to me, and I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm going to tell you guys that I was pissed. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, if you want to. The truth is, I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch, and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. He sat up for hours, you guys, his eyes cried open. And I said, must be me finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis, and this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was still in no pain, I can assure you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you the story unless I tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. And I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse. I thought to myself, what can I do to get even with this guy for all the things that he's done to me? And I came up with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. That's one thing we should never do, folks, is drink and think at the same time. Yeah. This is many, many years ago, you guys, when Super Glue first came out. And Super Glue was powerful. So, you know, Mrs. Baba has nothing on me, I can assure you. I was a fellow for sure that got started. And I got that Super Glue, and I read the directions on that Super Glue. And like I said, I was drunk and I wasn't seeing very clearly. And what I thought those directions said were, if this is human skin, you better get it off in 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this is human skin, you better get it off in 5 minutes is what it said. And I went over to this guy. I get so excited when I tell this story, I could just do it all over again. I went over to this guy. And I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not one place in there I have super glue, and I laughed about it. I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning with screams of horror like you cannot even believe it. I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's stupid. I'll tell you, what happened to my ex-husband, this guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can assure you. And we had a telephone by our bed, in our bedroom, like, and he called the police, and the cops got inside of our home with their sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And, you know, one thing you guys got to keep in mind here, they don't see things like this happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. And California wouldn't surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops were laughing, which suddenly the whole thing was funny. And they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And I said to those cops, and I said, what makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing there with glue on my hands for Christ's sake. You're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you cannot arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. They took that man to the very hospital I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the whole staff saw what Karen did. And they took me to jail, I might add. And it turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors down in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off. And they had to get two surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And, you know, there's a paper in about that at Creighton. Even if Jim's thinking about going to medical school, you can read about it if you want to. I don't want a paper in about me, but not like this, I gotta tell you. And I was sitting in that jail thinking to myself, I am getting the hell out of this marriage. When this guy comes home from the hospital, he's gonna glue something to mine shut. He would have too. I thought he would have. And God only knows I couldn't have that happen, you know. For those of you who don't know this, that happened to a lady in Kentucky about 3 years ago. It was on the national news. I had a wreck on the freeway. When I heard that, I thought, oh my God, better her than me, I gotta tell you. But anyway, you know, we have an immense step in this program, like I talked about earlier. And my sponsor told me, get on an airplane, fly to Sacramento, make amends to your ex-husband for that. And I said, Clancy, I'm not sorry that I did that. They're gonna have to make the amends. He said, I don't give a damn whether you're sorry or not. Get in that plane and get them. Do what I'm asking you, and maybe one of these days you will be sorry. And I'll tell you that in this room tonight, when that guy sees me, he kind of backs up, let me tell you. But we were able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends to him. And I will tell you guys, I walked away from that man. I was free what I had done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I will tell you the promises in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the first time they started coming through in my life. So, like I said earlier, motives mean nothing here. It's the action that counts and stuff. But anyway, I divorced that man one more time, and I got involved with the most bizarre man I've ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Lincoln, Nebraska was in the mafia for Christ's sake. And I was lying to him, and he was lying to me. It was your typical alcoholic nightmare is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was taking Valium for severe tumors I was starting to have. It was beginning to be no more fun, I got to tell you guys. You know, I'm a nurse, and I studied alcoholism, and I knew all about it before I became one. And it shows me one more time tonight what our book says is so true. Self-knowledge avails us nothing to this disease. It's action that counts. Nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous do we have a chapter called Into Thinking. We do have one that's called Into Action. And that's the only reason I'm standing here 19 years sober. And the day came here, the hospital told me, we have had all the crap we're going to take off of you, Karen. We cannot read about our nursing staff in the paper anymore. Glue and husbands, drunk driving charges, bad checks, all the stuff that you're doing. Doesn't mean you're doing Lincoln's in the paper, I'm sorry to say. And they knew my game, let me tell you. And they said, you're either going to a treatment center or you no longer have this job. Well, you guys, you know what? You don't tell people like me that stuff. And I said, you know what army's going to make me go to a treatment center? Excuse me. And I walked out of a job that I loved when the whole world, and I cannot say that enough tonight. And I drank and I drank and I died 1,000 times sober. I went to work at a nursing home there in Lincoln. And what I'm about ready to share with you guys is something I'm not proud to discuss from the AA podium. It took me years into my sobriety before I would ever mention this. I found myself stealing drugs from that nursing home. I was stealing morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium that I'd get my damn hands on. And it wasn't because I liked drugs at all. That had nothing to do with anything. I couldn't drink at work. I was physically addicted to alcohol. I had to have this stuff by now. I couldn't drink, so I stole drugs. And that's how I got into it and stuff. And I hated myself so bad, I cannot begin to tell you. I couldn't go more than 3 hours without drinking and using drugs, you guys, without shaking like a leaf and stuff. And I knew I was in hot water, let me tell you. And the day came, the people that ran that place came up to me and they said, Sharon, what is wrong with you? You are just weird is what you are. You know, you take care of the patients, you're a good nurse and stuff, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange too if you had 10 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange too. I threw my narcotic keys at them and I walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Zion Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that, you're better at that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining a certain level of alcohol in my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly, and I was in hot water up to my yin-yin, let me tell you. It was something I had to do. The fun was over. And when that happens, it's a whole different ballgame, let me tell you guys. And the day came through, and I got caught with a hand still in Washington Hospital, and this has got to be, without a doubt, the most humiliating day of my entire life. And they said, you give us your narcotic keys, get out of this hospital, but you'll walk back in here again. We're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing, Nebraska. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. But I said, Josh, it does too, as a matter of fact. And to make a long story shorter tonight, I lost my nursing license. And to make a long story shorter and shorter tonight, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the streets. And I've traveled the Midwest, I've prostituted myself, and I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or doing. I'm still so sick in the head sometimes, I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again, you know. And my sponsor assures me I'm still a very ill person. You think of that kind of crap. And, you know, I've been in nut houses, I've been in detoxes, I've been in jails, I've been in institutions. I cannot think of a thing that didn't happen to a super procrastinating female alcoholic. Things happen to me I'm not repeating this podium tonight, but I'm sure that you have the general idea. And 2 years went by for me, and then I was back there in Lincoln, standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And I certainly had better things intended for myself than to be doing that, I gotta tell you. I will never forget that last day of my drinking as long as I live. Although I really can't tell you that much about it, if you want to know the truth, and I hope to God it was the last day of my drinking, but here there was a Hilton Hotel adjacent to that Skid Row area. I remember thinking 2 years ago, I was just on top of the Hilton Hotel and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I rather imagine those folks felt the same way when they arrived there. You know, like I said, I can't tell you much about it at all. I woke up in an intensive care ward at the very hospital I was born at, the very hospital I worked at for 19 years, and I will tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. You know, I'm not a very big person. I only weighed 95 pounds when I got sober, and I was coming off a quarter of whatever day and 200 milligrams of Valium a day. That is a lot of booze, and I had a lot of pills, and I had a lot of dying, let me tell you. I laid in that intensive care ward. I had tubes coming out of my belly. They were draining fluid off my liver. I had IVs going. And I found myself in withdrawal that was so bad I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I laid in that intensive care ward, and I shook, and I shook, and I died, and I died for 30 solid days. And I'd scream at those nurses and say, you get me some Librium, you get me some Valium, you get me something. This is absolutely inhumane that anybody took this kind of withdrawal. And they said, Karen, listen to us. You need to fill one of those tremors and maybe you'll never do it again. And I did not want to hear that, let me tell you. They went on to tell me, there's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any irregularities. You're not getting one damn drug from this. So quit asking this for them. But let me tell you what these people did for me, and I'll be forever grateful as long as I'm sober in this program. They got 10 members of Alcoholics Anonymous to come and sit with me. God bless Central Offices of Alcoholics Anonymous, let me tell you guys. And I owe this program my life for that, let me tell you. I can never repay enough, let me tell you. But, you know, I have to say something, and this is just my opinion and my opinion only. I'm not trying to step on anybody's toes, let me tell you, but sometimes I hear people in AA say, some people, not very many, but some people, I hear them make stupid comments in my opinion like, we don't go unless the alcoholic calls us. Ladies and gentlemen, I stand here 19 years old tonight. I never made any damn phone call. I hope to God I never forget who I'm coming from here. I think that Bill called Bob. I don't think that Bob called Bill. He's good enough for our co-founders, and by God, it's good enough for us, let me tell you. I hope I never forget that, let me tell you, but you know, my most favorite commitment I do is my L.A. County Hospital panel, and it's a bedside panel, and we go visit people once a month that are really dying from alcoholism and stuff, and they don't ask us to come. We just walk in and ask to be of service to them, and we have pulled two people out of there as a result of doing that. Sometimes we get teeth on us, all kinds of stuff, but we leave if they don't want to talk to us. At least we give them the opportunity to get sober, let me tell you. But at any rate, you know, I just fell in love with these people, and they say things like, Karen, just keep breathing. That's all you got to do is breathe. And I say, when is this withdrawal going to stop? And they said, when is time essence going to stop? And that wasn't good enough for me. I wanted a date is what I wanted. They're absolutely accurate about that. When it's time. At 30 days of sobriety, I walked in the official treatment room of that hospital. I'm a product of the treatment center. I have no opinion on one way or the other, but apparently I went to a fine one because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous. And boy, there's a lot of bad ones after you guys, let me tell you. And thank God I went to a good one. And let me tell you what I was like when I was 30 days sober. I asked you so desperately on day one that 30 days later was a whole different ballgame. You start telling me what to do. And, you know, when I went through treatment, a lot of people got kicked out of treatment for fraternizing. I didn't. That was a fraternizing orange person, I can assure you. They used to bring the patients of the hospital, and they'd say, look at her, see what's going to happen to you if you keep on drinking. Look at her. And I thought, how dare you bring people in my room and say stuff like that? But you guys, you know what? In retrospect tonight, I am really glad they did that. I get to think about that before I pick up any drink. But anyway, I did not do well in that inpatient 30-day program due to my nasty, bad behavior. I was just a nasty little thing. I was in there for 7 long months. That's a long time to be an inpatient 30-day program, but I eventually completed all that. And I went to an outpatient program, I went to an evening care program, and I went to an aftercare program. And I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I rapidly went through 19 sponsors in that town. I would tell the new people, you don't need to read the book, and you don't need a sponsor. But anyway, I do recommend this as an individual program. And needless to say, I was not real popular with the old-timers in Lincoln, Nebraska. You guys, the old-timers in A are so precious to me as I stand here tonight. But not in 1982, I could have cared less than what these people thought. And you can pull your crack on it just for so long, and these old-timers are going to start nailing you one way after the other. God love them, the old-timers and Alcoholics Anonymous. They really saved my life, and they are dying off right and left, I got to tell you guys, and they have taught me well. And I'll be eternally grateful, I got to tell you, but this little guy with 20 years of sobriety grabbed me up an AA one day. He said, come outside, I want to talk to you. He said, you stay away from new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA they need the book of AA and a sponsor? He said, you're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. And he went on to tell me, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska this weekend. His name is Clancy. This man's speaker, you're going to ask this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I knew all about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. I told this old-timer, I said, who the hell do you think you are that you're going to tell me you're going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, you don't get in that car and go this Saturday. I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. And I paid that money back, too, by the way. I do pay it back. And I will tell you guys from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that Clancy literally, and I mean literally, put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. My life has never been the same since that talk. And there's a reason for that. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identified with another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in my life. I wouldn't have asked that man to sponsor me in a million years. Trust me, I would have asked him. And I found myself walk across that convention floor and ask that man to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazier than I thought of being. And I thought to myself, what did he say that to me for? He doesn't even know me. And I wasn't aware of the fact this old timer called him, huge pride of him coming to Nebraska, and asked me if he would talk to me. He said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. I was sitting in my little white dress on, my little white gloves on, acting like an angel, and he saw right through my crap, I gotta tell you, and thank God he saw through it. And he said, Karen, I like to sponsor people on long distance basis, but I'm gonna do this for you, because if I don't do it for you, you'll probably go die somewhere. He said, I'm gonna tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good, because I'm gonna say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me, I tell you not to call me every day. You're going to read that book. You're going to sponsor people. You're become an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not going to argue with me. You're going to defend your actions to me. You're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about, we stood at the turning point. This is the day of my recovery. Really good to get in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said 2 words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. I don't tell people yes, sir. Trust me, I don't. One more time, God do it for me, but I can't do it for myself. Respect's got to start for me somewhere. I might as well start with my sponsor, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in AA in the right way. One of my sponsors, a lot of women in that town. I'm not bragging about that. It's not that much fun to sponsor 56 crazy women in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I grew to love those women very, very much, and I'll tell you why. They really showed me the first 4 years of my sobriety what to do and what not to do in this program. And every one of those women is still sober today, with the exception of one, and she died in a car accident when she was 13 years sober. But she died sober, you guys, and it wasn't because of me. They were active members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the first directions my sponsor gave me, I want you to get that nursing license back. I tried to tell this man, I cannot have that kind of humiliation. He said, Karen, are you arguing with me? And I said, no. He said, get the State Board of Nursing Nebraska and tell those people you've been sober in the eighth for a year and a half. You got the option to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that's without a doubt the most important thing I can say in this room tonight, this barn tonight. I did what my sponsor asked me to do, what I thought would work tonight. And I asked him for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I can assure you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, you know the truth. And I had to keep my mouth shut in the process, too. And one of the happiest days of my life occurred 16 years ago this month, when one more time I was stripped in front of the State Board of Nursing Nebraska, and what they told me brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, welcome home. You're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And as a gift from AA, I do not deserve that. But by God, I intend to take it and stuff. And, you know, I came here to visit a couple times. I fell in love with Southern California AA. If you're new in this room tonight, I want you to know that you are in the mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous in the whole world. This is the best place to be and be sober. And I know that's true because I get the honor of speaking all over the world. And I welcome you and I hope that you stand. And I tell my sponsor on the phone one day, I want to move to Los Angeles. I wanted that crazy goodness speech of all those crazy people. I knew I'd feel like a glove there and not been wrong about that either. I want to go on the Pacific group. I want to look at UCLA in the operating room. Be a trigger transplant teams, their heart liver transplant teams. I want this and I want that. And every single one of those things have come true for me. And those are all gifts from AA. Like I said, I don't deserve it, but like I said, I intend to take it. You know, people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Kim? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them than what our Charles tradition says long form. So that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, I may forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And I'm going to say one more thing. I'm going to shut my mouth here. It has been one hell of a walk in Skid Row, Nebraska. So I stand in Visalia, California tonight, and I think that that's the grace of God now for my son, and so I would have missed it all. Thank you for having me. Thank you for my life.